Live from the Ken and Valerie Baker Studio at WHYY, this is Studio 2.
On Wednesday, August 5th, welcome, 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 friends, on Into the Program. I'm Cherry Gregg.
I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. There are many aspects of being a consumer today that you might find a little perturbing, Cherry.
Oh, yeah.
Like calling customer service, being put
that
on
part.
Hold, redirected to an AI chatbot. Spending 2 hours of your time, you still didn't get an answer. Maybe you're trying to cancel a subscription. It seems like it's not working. Now you call back, blah, 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 blah. There's junk fees when you check out. Anyways, there's a couple of thinkers who have come up with like a unifying theory of what all of this is. They call it the annoyance economy. And part of their theory is that companies do this on purpose. They add friction because they can separate you from more of your money that way. And they think there are fixes to this. Government fixes to this annoyance economy. So today on the show, we're going to explain what the annoyance economy is. We're going to explain if and how our government can do something to make it a whole lot less annoying. And we'd love to hear from you. This is a big audience participation show. Tell us about your experience dealing with the annoyance economy. Do you have any horror stories?
Minute or less. I love to hear it.
A minute or less. 888-477-9499. Studio 2 at WHYY.org. If you're on YouTube or Facebook, drop your annoyance economy story in the chat.
And Avi, I have a long list of stories.
A long list.
Oh my gosh.
A company that shall remain nameless. You were talking about them earlier today.
I know. I had to go on the internet, on social media, to shame them in order to get my service canceled.
I will say this. I had a very positive customer service experience this morning.
Oh, you did?
And you're never going to believe who it was with.
Who?
The Philadelphia Parking Authority.
What?
Because I don't think, this is just my suspicion, they don't outsource their customer service. You call and it's just someone who works for the PBA.
Did they cancel a ticket?
No. It was about getting a residential parking permit. I had done something wrong. And the person fixed it like instantly and they picked up on like the second ring. And
oh,
there was no menu
goodness.
Or anything. I'm telling, look, this is not me shilling for the PBA. I'm just saying this is what happened today.
Wow. Avi has
so,
have a positive.
It can be done well, is what I'm saying.
You could have a positive story, and we're willing to, you know, hear that as well. Because, I mean, not everybody's annoyed. Some people do a good job at this. 888-477-9499. Email studio2 at whyy.org. And I was also telling you about a company who I think does a great job on stuff like this. So, you know, we'd love to hear your story.
Yeah, both sides of the coin. Before we get to our trio of local news stories, by the way, it is another giveaway Wednesday.
Oh, yeah.
All summer, we're giving out tickets to great events in our region. Stick around to the end of the show for today's reveal and your chance to win some free ticks.
Trio of local news stories,
yeah, let's
shall
do a
we?
Trio. Yeah.
All right. First story is from New Jersey. The New Jersey Attorney General's office filed a lawsuit against Amazon over its delivery driver service, which the state argues exploits its drivers. The suit takes issue with Amazon's Delivery Service Partners program, which is advertised as an opportunity for entrepreneurs to partner with the online shopping giant while managing a system of local drivers. You've probably seen them, right? The only problem, according to the lawsuit, is that the DSPs are beholden to Amazon. They cannot unionize and cannot advocate for better working conditions. As a result, the state claims that Amazon drivers are working longer hours under worse conditions and for less money than drivers at UPS, FedEx, and the U.S. Postal Service. To make matters worse, these drivers, and again, you've seen them in the vest, according to the complaint, they have to deal with invasive surveillance such as AI and cameras inside of their vehicles, and they can be fired for even the smallest of infractions. The complaint alleges that Amazon is so strict there is a time limit for breaks and drivers often use the bathroom in bottles. That's what they're alleging, right? The AG says that altogether, these are unfair, anti-competitive business practices. Amazon, of course, clapped back. They are denying these allegations. A spokesperson for that company said that the DSPs, they're small businesses. They make their own independent decisions about hiring and management and can choose to work with other companies besides Amazon. And I should note that this is is not the first time that New Jersey has sued Amazon. The state is part of three other lawsuits, including one over how Amazon treats pregnant and disabled workers.
This was eye-opening for me just because I didn't understand this is how the system worked. I didn't know about DSPs. So there's these semi-independent, almost franchises within mm-hmm. the Amazon system that do a lot of the delivering. And I guess that's when you see people what look like in their
and
personal
cars or little vans.
I didn't know that's what that was. Mm-hmm. So for me, this was clarifying. And I obviously have no idea whether Amazon has violated the law here, whether this lawsuit will be successful. But it was interesting just to learn a little bit more about how it works, because I was ignorant to all
and
that.
And that's how they're able to scale up and get, you know, your package in a day, because they're not limited by the number of drivers. They can bring people on or rely on these DSPs. So interesting how this lawsuit will turn out.
Our second story is actually somewhat related to delivery drivers, interestingly enough. So you might not know this, but there is a new class of subscription loading zones that are speeding up traffic in Center City, Philadelphia, but also leading to lots of fines. And oh, by the way, you might be seeing a lot more of them soon. Great reporting from Mayor Rindy of Billy Penn about the rollout of so-called smart loading zones in Philadelphia. Mm. Here's how they work. To use one of these smart loading zones, you have to register your vehicle with a system called Curb Pass. And there's a camera that tracks how long you're in that loading zone and charges you about 10 cents a minute. So it's like pay-as-you-go loading zones. The idea is to keep loading zones clear for the type of vehicles that actually need them, like delivery trucks. Mm-hmm. And the PPA, which runs the system, says it is working. They've installed 22 smart loading zones in Center City, and they report on these streets fewer double-parked delivery vehicles and traffic speeds 30% faster as a result. Now, the downside is this. If you are in one of these smart loading zones for more than 3 minutes and you don't have a curb pass, you are straight up going to get a ticket of $51 or more, because they've got cameras on these smart loading zones and the tickets are automatic. So far, the PPA has raked in nearly $5 million in fines since the smart zones launched about a year ago, and they say more are coming. The PPA already has plans for 33 more smart loading zones across Center City. So parking and loading and waiting is changing in Philadelphia.
I think I got one of these tickets, Avi.
You think so?
I think so. Mayor Rindy profiled a parker who didn't know what in the world the ticket was for. And
it's a different
sign.
It's like a purple sign.
I saw the ticket and I'm like, I think I got one of those.
Yes.
And I didn't know what it was for, you know. And it's strange because you see the sign. It says registration required, but you don't really know what it is. Yeah. And you just sit in your car for a minute or whatever. And but yeah, I mean, kudos to the PPA on making traffic faster. But I do think they ought to educate people, you know, because you don't really know what that sign is. It's very confusing. And maybe they should give people a warning ticket first.
I think a warning ticket makes sense if you're a first time violator. I also think you do need some loading zones. And I'm not saying they're getting rid of all the traditional loading zones, but you do need some loading zones for people that genuinely just need to pull aside for maybe 5 minutes to wait for someone. Like, you don't want those people.
And if you're in the car, you know. So.
Right, exactly. Exactly. You don't want those people to say, well, I'm not going to pull over. I'd rather just double park, because if I pull over, I know I'm going to get a ticket. Mm-hmm. I'll just chance it. Like, you could incentivize the wrong behavior if you do too much of this, I would imagine.
Yeah. For sure.
But
for sure.
I understand the concept. I totally understand the concept.
And they making money. $5 mil. Ooh, 51 a pop. So.
Well, there's so much more automated enforcement in general. Like the red light cameras, the speeding cameras. Now you got the smart loading zones. Like, cameras are like the vanguard of parking enforcement in cities now.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Yeah. Third story, by the way, to slow things down a little bit. Woosah. A new Philadelphia restaurant encourages a more European-style chill, laid-back snacking and chit-chatting culture. Yes, no rushing here. A new spot, it's called Bar Chi Chi. It's the latest restaurant by Ellen Yin of High Street Hospitality. You know, they own Fork and A Kitchen. And this one will be located in Rittenhouse Square. It'll be open all day. And it is designed for customers to come in for coffee and a pastry, maybe stay or come back for lunch, then pop in for drinks and small plates in the evening.
Ooh. Yin,
yeah, I know.
Speaking my language.
You like that. I
absolutely
knew you would like it.
I feel like all of a sudden a scarf and a beret just appeared.
Oh, yes.
I don't even know where it came from.
So Yin apparently is obsessed with Northern Italy, and she loves the vibe there where people can just kind of linger. They get espresso. They're holding court with their friends and just staying, and they look up and they're drinking wine too, right?
And they've been there. All of a sudden, you've been there for 2 hours.
Been there for hours, right? And there's no date yet on when it's going to open, but according to the Inquirer, they'll have homemade Italian pastries and baguettes and pizza Bianca sandwiches. You can get espresso and wine. It's just supposed to be really, really amazing. And I really like the idea because, you know, a lot of times you go to a restaurant, man, they're rushing you.
Oh,
they're hovering.
Oh, yeah. Are you still working on that? You finished with that?
I know.
Can I take that out of your way?
I had somebody take my plate with two fries left. I was like, I want those last two fries.
It is a pet peeve of mine with American dining culture, yeah, which generally I love, that it does seem like they want to move you along. Now, I get it because they have to turn tables over for the servers to make money, for the restaurant to make money. I get it on some level. But when you travel, sometimes you're like, this is way chiller, and this is actually more enjoyable than the kind of rushing you along American
thing. I know. You got to take that last sip of wine for the guy, and you're fighting with the glass with the guy. I want every sip.
Every sip. That's our annoyance economy right there. Speaking of, we're going to talk about this idea that there is an annoyance economy out there and that there's something we can do to fix it, and we want to hear your thoughts. Studio 2 at WHYY.org. Don't go anywhere, please.
We're sorry. All of our representatives are still assisting other customers. Please remain on the line as we value your call.
And while you're waiting, might as well listen to Studio 2 on WHYY. I'm Avi Wolfman.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. I mean, we've all been there spending hours on hold with insurance companies.
Oh, get that music out
I
of
know,
here.
I know. It's just making my skin crawl. Makes you so bad. So you're spending hours on hold with insurance companies. You're trying to cancel a subscription that seemed impossible to escape. Or you're getting to the final stages of a checkout only to realize that the cost of a concert ticket is suddenly way higher.
These hassles that eat up our time, money, and patience are central to what a recent study calls the annoyance economy. The authors argue that companies have realized there's money to be made by just making things difficult enough that we give up.
So today, we've invited them onto the show to talk about how the so-called annoyance economy works and what we can do about it. We have Neil Mahoney, professor of economics and director of the Stanford Institute for Economic Policy Research on. Neil, welcome to Studio 2.
Oh, it's great to be here.
And then we also have Chad Mazel, Executive Director of Project 2029, a Democratic Party policy blueprint. Chad, welcome to Studio 2.
Thanks. Good to be here.
And as always, we'd love to hear from you. Tell us about your experience dealing with the annoyance economy. If you call, we promise our screeners are real humans, not chatbots, and we'll try to minimize hold times as much as humanly possible. Our number is 888-477-9499. Our email is studio2@whyy.org. If you're on YouTube or Facebook, comment in the live chat, and let's just start with the caller.
Yeah.
This is Sally from Montgomeryville, who has an annoyance economy saga to share with us. Hey, Sally, you're on Studio 2. What happened? And we'll just say up front, we're sorry it happened.
Thank you. I probably could tell 10 stories, but I'll tell this one. I bought approximately $2,000 Pro Frigidaire refrigerator, very thoughtfully, consumer's guide, the whole story. Get it home. Within, I don't know, a couple months, maybe 2 months, it broke. It was freezing my food in the refrigerator. Mm. I'd reach in, grab a carrot, solid, hard, frozen carrot. That's crazy. So 5 different times they sent out teams to fix it. 5 different times the exact same thing happened. And by the time I get to their, you know, the big wigs, and I say, listen, you make a refrigerator that doesn't work. I'm tired of wasting money and food. I would like a new refrigerator. Because they had all of the documentation, right there. No. No, we can't do that. It's past the warranty date, blah, 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 blah. Mm. So eventually, they gave me the offer to buy a new refrigerator at that level or above for a 40% discount. So think about that. You buy a refrigerator that doesn't work, and then their answer is to let you buy another one.
Wow. Sally.
For sure. For all those people, I have an answer for you. I ended up collecting all my data and my pictures, and I went to the place that I bought it, and they went to war for me, and I have a new refrigerator.
Congratulations, Sally.
Sally fought the fight. That's
what
happened there.
She had some time to that day.
Yeah, they picked out the wrong person. Thank you, Sally.
Thank you so much, Sally. And so, Chad, Neil, I want to sort of level set the conversation. And Chad, I'll start with you. I want you to kind of tell us the moment that you guys realized that the experience like Sally had, you know, experiences I've had, Avi had a good one today, but, you know, just generally that somehow, some way, all of these negative experiences, these annoyances were somehow connected and actually were money making for someone.
Right. So Neil and I worked together in the Biden administration at the White House, and we were really focused on a number of things, but one in particular, a project that we worked on with others, was focused on what we call junk fees. And these are all the fees that we know well that are tacked on to concert tickets, onto your DoorDash order, and everything in between. And they pop up, and often it's very late in the process, and you're stuck paying a much higher amount than what you anticipated. And when we left the Biden administration, we realized that this was really just the tip of the iceberg, that there are so many, often corporate practices, but government, as we all know, is guilty of this too, oftentimes, but often corporate practices where they make things very easy when it involves getting things that they want, right? Like if they want your money, it's so easy these days to make a purchase, to have something delivered to you, have a service, whatever. But then when it's something that you want, they make it extremely difficult. So if you need help, like the caller, if you need something replaced, if you need customer service, if you want to cancel a subscription, they make things extremely difficult. And so that's really the body of this work. And we set out to write this report and really quantify it. We call it the annoyance economy, and it translates to at least $165 billion in wasted time and money every single year.
Yeah, and Neil, I wonder, did you realize this is just part of the business model? Like, and you know, if you want to throw out an example of how it's just part of the business model, I'd love for you to do that.
Yeah, no, totally. And I'm an economist, so I do think about things from companies' perspectives, and companies are in the business of making money. So think about signing up for a subscription versus canceling. Maybe it's a newspaper. You can sign up with limited clicks. You know, they try and auto-populate your credit card information, make it real easy. But when it's time to cancel, like maybe you can't cancel on a weekend. Maybe you have to call up during business hours. Maybe the first person you talk to, you know, tries to make you a sales pitch and then transfers you to somebody else where you can ultimately cancel. So there really just is this huge asymmetry, which, you know, again, it makes sense if it's a company trying to extract as much money from you as possible. But it's not the way our economy is supposed to work. Right? If you don't like something, you should be able to switch and use your money where you want to. And so I think part of what we're doing is really grounded in common sense economic principles, which is, you know, if you want something, you should have it. If you don't want it, you shouldn't. And we should use our laws to make markets work better for people.
Why would this be getting worse? And by the way, Michael, our commenter, agrees with you and says these companies don't waste any time taking your money, though.
Oh, no.
But why would this be on the rise? Because everything you're laid out, the logic of that would apply to any business at any time in the history of market-based economy. Like,
totally.
why would it be on the rise? Yeah.
It's a couple things. One is, you know, we talk about best practices diffusing throughout the economy, right? One economy learns an innovation and then other companies follow in their footsteps. I think here we've seen sort of worst practices diffuse. So travel, airlines, hotels were first movers in this space. They figured out how to tack on the junk fees, how to, you know, when you call up the airline, they are 100% of the time experiencing unusually high call volumes,
right,
which like defies the definition of unusually high, at least is how I understand it. And so those practices, I think, have diffused. And there's, you know, there's consultants who have learned the tricks of the trade in travel and are teaching people in other industries. No, I think part of it is things moving online, that, you know, as we purchase more and more things online, there's more opportunities to include fees at the last minute when you're checking out, when you already have that awesome DoorDash order and you've talked to everybody else in your family about what they want. And then suddenly, you know, rather than being $45, it's $65 because of all the fees you tack on, and you just press order because you don't want to go through the process again. So it's the online ordering experience. I think it's easy, you know, if you're working for a company and you have to interact with people in person, it's hard to be mean, right? People like to be nice to people. But once it becomes automated, it takes away that human connection, which I think can smooth over some of the incentives companies have. So those would be my three reasons.
So the biggest disincentive, or the biggest incentive for companies not to do this, is that people will take their business elsewhere. And I think, Chad, like someone listening to this will be saying, well, this is going to take care of itself because other companies will see an opportunity and they'll come in and undercut with good customer service. And off mic, we were talking about, love them or hate them, Amazon does make it very easy to return things, report something stolen, and we've seen them scale dramatically, in part, you would say, because the customer service experience is pretty seamless. Like, why not just assume, Chad, that this will take care of itself with more competition?
Yeah, so, you know, unfortunately, there are many industries where there just isn't very much competition.
Right.
And so you don't have many choices. You know, you want to go to a bank that has an outlet nearby, you know, a place nearby where you can go for your banking needs. There aren't, for many people, there are not many options. When it comes to health insurance, you are limited in terms of, you know, options that you have. And then it's really difficult to change. You know, it's one thing to wait on hold for half an hour or 20 minutes and deal with a couple of, you know, sales pitches if you want to cancel your New York Times subscription or whatever. That's annoying, but surmountable. But, you know, there are other services and products that are much harder to leave. So I mentioned health insurance. You know, most people, you know, you have a window when you can do that each year. And if you're outside of that, then you're pretty much stuck. If you have a bank, you know, they've got all your information. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, you have your checks from them, you've got your, you know, whatever, your auto, you know, your bank information auto-populated on your computer. It's very what we call sticky. It's hard to move on. And so there just aren't that those incentives for companies to make things easier. They make things much more difficult, and therefore it's much, much more difficult to move with your feet and actually have in a market that works for people.
Yeah. And by the way, listeners, we'd love to hear from you. Tell us about your experience dealing with the annoyance economy. And again, we promise our screeners are real people. the number to call is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. Let me read a comment from Steven on Facebook who says, I sometimes get annoyed if I have to call a certain business and cannot speak to a real person immediately. The robot that answered the call will ask many questions before finally putting me through to a person that will assist me. I've had that experience as well. Let's bring in another caller. We have Tony from Brookhaven on the line. Tony, you're on Studio Too. Share your experience.
Oh, wow. It's an honor to be on the air with everybody. Thanks for the time.
Sure.
I am a product manager for a digital-first company, financial services, and I think what a lot of what I would consider our users may think is part of this annoyance economy scheme, but you just mentioned financial services companies have a sticky relationship. I agree. But we also think that in the best interest of our clients, we should be trying to make sure they're making educated decisions. So presenting users with choices, with information, to them feels like hoops and hurdles. But we're trying to be very intentional with presenting these things so that they're making the next best decision for themselves and have the information, and like spending 5 minutes of reading or spending like 40 minutes on the phone or hours on the phone with somebody, You know, we're trying to help keep them in our digital channels, not have to interact with the call center, precisely because, like, we have a lot of data that proves that these digital experiences are ultimately better for everybody. Hmm. So, yeah, just a bit of an advocate for some things that people might think are annoying.
Interesting.
Yeah. Thank you.
Oh, I like that call.
I like that call, Tony from Brookhaven. Huh. And that sort of led me to my next thought. Are there reasons to make it a little bit stickier and a little bit harder? And I'm thinking about this because I'm going through some stuff with insurance companies trying to change ownership or beneficiaries, right? You want to prevent fraud. So you make it like a few hoops for people to have to jump through in order to make sure, like, that it's not too easy. And I want to get your thoughts on that, Neil. Should certain things be a little sticky for the customer's protection?
I mean, totally on the fraud side, right? And that shows up in insurance and in banking. You do need to jump through some hoops to verify identity, to make sure that you're acting, you know, in the best interests of you and your family. So that's totally true. I think, you know, where we think some of these practices go too far is where they're intentionally designed. And, you know, we've seen this from lawsuits, we've seen this from investigative journalism, where, you know, companies are, you know, doing something they call heavy queue, which is intentionally slowing down the rate at which they answer people's phone calls just to dissuade them from doing what they want. And so those things, I think, are hugely problematic. And where you draw the line obviously depends upon the nature of the risks.
And that's eventually going to get us into the conversation of how to legislate this, because I think the nuance that Tony was bringing into the conversation there was that there might be like everyone wants to speak to a representative. We all want to hit zero. Let's get it over with. I just want to talk to a person. But I could understand a company saying, look, we have evidence that's a less efficient way for everyone to get through this situation. And that a lot of problems, some percentage of problems, can actually be dealt with online with a click or two, and that everyone actually ultimately saves time, even if it doesn't feel like you're saving time. I mean, I guess, Chad, I want you to contend with
that. Can I jump in with an example here?
Yeah, Neil, go ahead.
Like, so, you know, there's been rulemaking about something called click to cancel, which is, it should be just as easy to cancel a subscription as it is to sign up. And so that's the general principle, which is, you know, if you can sign up in your pajamas Saturday at 11 p.m., you shouldn't have to take time out of work and wait on hold for an hour and a half to cancel. But we should have safeguards. So when people started thinking about these rules, they realized, you know, maybe we should carve out canceling delivery of your prescription meds. Because you don't want somebody to accidentally click a button and then not receive the meds they need, right? Make them jump through one or two hoops in that setting,
right?
And that's what a good rulemaking process does, is it surfaces like the reasonable reasons why we should have a little bit of friction from the ones which are unnecessary and actually make our economy work worse and work less well.
And so I wonder, to piggyback on what Avi was asking, sort of like, what should be some of the things? I get it. We want to make sure fraud is not happening, and we should make cancellation as easy as it is to sign up. Are there other sort of like rules of thumb, like that differentiate between something that is friction for a good reason and friction for a bad reason that's an annoyance?
Perfect. So I'll give you we've done a lot of work on junk fees, right? Those sort of back-end fees in the fine print. I think our basic principle is the price you see should be the price you pay. So if something you have to pay no matter what, like if you're renting an apartment and there is a common room charge that everybody has to pay because everybody gets access to the common room, or there is a mail sorting fee that everybody has to pay because everybody, you know, has mail delivered to their apartment, so it is a mandatory fee, you should see it when you're searching for an apartment on Zillow or apartments.com or somewhere else. It shouldn't be something that's sprung on you at the last minute when you're signing your lease. However, suppose it's something optional, right? Like your apartment has some fancy car washing service, dog walking service, like that doesn't need to be in the upfront price. Right? Very reasonable for that to be sort of an option that you can choose when you get there.
Right.
And so there's common sense ways to separate what I think are problematic practices.
Now it gets a little tricky,
but very
reasonable. So counterexample this, and we got a lot of callers waiting, so I do
want
to get to some folks. But
the
counterexample that, like, one way is the airlines have thought about this is that they've sort of made everything optional, and theoretically, I could travel to San Francisco somehow
with no bags
and I just show up in my clothes and I stay there for a week and this is supposed to work for me. These are
and your kids don't sit next to you and like there are certain things
it's
which
technically
are like
optional right, but like in practice it's not all that optional, and that's where you get into some of the nuance of like how do you create useful rules. Chad, I know you wanted to chime in on some of this.
Well, no, I'm eager. Let's get to more grievances. I like to hear.
Okay, so I think Roger.
We're doing annoyance economy therapy.
Roger from Bangor, Pennsylvania, I think has a story that's going to undercut something I said earlier.
Okay.
Uh-oh, Roger, you're on Studio 2. What's your story to share?
Hi there. I bought a set of four chairs from Amazon, a third-party vendor. When I got them, I assembled it. The parts didn't go together right. It was cheap. I was afraid to tighten it down. I took a picture of the defect, packaged it back up, applied for a reef to ship it back. And Amazon says get to the vendor. The vendor says get to Amazon. Back and forth, waste of time. Finally, I get to where Amazon says they'll guarantee the postage back, which was $250 for two boxes. I go to UPS. I got Amazon on speakerphone. I'm with the UPS guy. I said, all right, UPS guy, listen to this. And I say, Amazon, is there anything that could ever possibly happen that's going to prevent you from refunding me this $250 after I tell this guy to press the button and make the postage charge my card? And they said, no, you're good. So he presses the button. I send it back. And the next thing you know, then nobody wants to pay me back my $250.
Oh, boy.
So I called and complained so many times that they finally got mixed up. They actually, Amazon over-refunded me a little bit.
Hey
that's
a Robin Hood story in the
right,
end.
I love that.
Took the money and ran.
Thanks, Roger.
But it was a lot of hard work.
Yeah,
you earned that extra money.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
Wow.
It was compensated, I guess.
Roger for Banger.
One more caller before the break. This is Lily from Delaware, who is on the line and has a story to share. Hey, Lily, you're on Studio 2. What was your experience?
Hello. So I had scheduled a pickup for FedEx, and they didn't pick up, and so I called the customer service, and they have the automated message, and like I had to figure out how to get to an actual person. So I was like, failure pickup, or I was like, and just what I had to figure out which words to say to actually get to a person.
Yeah, magic
so
words.
Say, yeah. So I was like, missed pickup. And I think that was like the fifth time I tried to call.
Missed
so
pickup.
Finally
opened the door.
Missed pickup is the magic word. Then I got to an agent and they rescheduled my pickup and they told me that the driver was not able to get into the area. So the next day rolls around, nobody's picking up. I call again and I'm asking, okay, what happened? Why was no one able to pick up? And then apparently I was told that the driver was there, but then they weren't there. And I'm like, I don't know how they're there. I have a Ring camera. No one came up to my porch.
Did they eventually pick it up?
Yeah,
Lily.
What's the conclusion?
You got to give us the conclusion.
Yes. So they eventually do pick it up, but that's after I had called about like five times. Almost every day. I called in the morning before they pick up, and I'm like, hey, just confirming there's a pickup today. So the conclusion was that they did pick up. The issue, I guess, is like, I obviously, you know, by the third day, I probably would have just dropped the package off myself, but currently I am pregnant, so the package is too heavy for me to take. So it's like I really needed somebody to come and get it, and I let the customer service representative know that, like, I'm pregnant. And they're all like, you know, it's not their fault. They're very kind. And I'm like, it's not your fault. It's whoever is driving dispatch person's fault, but they can't give me that information.
Thank you. That's Lily from Delaware.
It's the theme is always, like, you have to be just crazy persistent. That's how everyone is getting through every single challenge.
It seems like you have to have, time today. You have to have the time, to fight to get the ultimate conclusion.
I'll tell you off air who has time today, by the way, who I know. Never mind. Mm-mm. Never mind that. 888-477-9499, studio2@whyy.org. We're talking about the annoyance economy. Keep those stories coming. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Studio 2 on WHYY. I'm Avi Wolfman-Aaron.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. Before we get back to our conversation about the so-called annoyance economy, it is time to reveal our Giveaway Wednesday event. I'll hit it.
She had her rings on her fingers, bells on her shoes. I knew without asking she was singing into the blues.
That's the sound of the Jerry Garcia Symphonic Celebration. And the members of the official Jerry Garcia Band will be playing with the Philly Pops at the Highmark Mann Center on Friday, August 28th at 8 p.m. A pair of seats to the show under the pavilion would run you $156. But if you're the sixth person who emails us now at studio2@whyy.org, you'll get a pair free on us. And now let's keep on trucking.
Oh, Jerry. Yeah. Back to dealing with the exhausting everyday hassles of life and how companies are profiting from our frustrations.
With us this hour, Neil Mahoney, professor of economics and director of the Stanford Institute for Economic Policy Research, and Chad Mazel, executive director of Project 2029, a Democratic Party policy blueprint.
And of course, we'd love to hear from you, our listeners. Tell us about your experience dealing with the annoyance economy. The number to call is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And for our Facebook and YouTubers, you could put those comments in the chat.
One more caller. Let's bring it real quick before we get back to our convo. This is Jason from New Jersey on line two, who I think maybe has a tip for us. Hey, okay. Jason, what's your tip?
Hey, guys, how are you? So I actually am the programmer of these systems that you guys actually are hating calling into. Ooh. So all the top 500, top 100 companies, obviously, you know, their telecom systems have Mount AI built in it. So I got very frustrated. I was dealing with Xfinity, and I will say it because their phone system is horrible. But I was given a tip by them. Anytime you wanted to get through, say disconnect. Disconnect.
No.
Disconnect will probably disconnect you from the computer and route you to a live person.
They're like, wait, hold up. You don't mean us. You don't mean disconnecting from us.
That's so interesting.
No, just that computer's sitting there listening to you. So disconnect. Wow. So I even tried live person, speak to someone, this and that. And then, of course, you get sent to a third world country calling center anyway.
Right.
But we now are in the phase of I'm having to sell this, and I'm trying to figure out the best way. So there are systems out there that will work. It's just how much programming goes behind it.
Interesting.
Jason,
wow, what a
gave
call.
Gave us an inside view.
So I guess the idea being is if you say disconnect, they're worried that they're losing you.
A customer.
And, interesting.
It's something they want. They want to keep you.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay, so one thing I did want to bring up, and this was brought up by one of our commenters, Judith, who was talking about like the hurdles that people who are trying to get government benefits have to clear, and how that just sort of changes the calculus on things like food stamps and getting access to things that healthcare, things people really need.
Mm-hmm.
Chad, I wanted you to speak to that. Is that an increasing problem? Is it part of this annoyance economy?
You know, it's the thing about the annoyance economy is it touches almost every corner of American life, and government is definitely guilty of it too. And unfortunately, you know, there was a big law that was a bill that was passed into law last year, you know, the so-called One Big Beautiful Bill, and it really added a ton of paperwork and red tape and other hoops and hurdles that people will have to jump through in order to access, you know, healthcare, with Medicaid, with nutrition assistance, with SNAP, you know, formerly known as food stamps, and other programs. And you know, that was, and I think the authors of the bill would say that was intentional. They wanted to make it more difficult to access these programs and these services. But the result is pretty significant, unfortunately, especially for people you know, people who are participating in Medicaid and SNAP are, you know, leading busy lives. Most of them work pretty low wage jobs oftentimes. They have families. And so, you know, they just don't have time to, you know, go to the office multiple times, call the SNAP office 10 times a day, you know, whatever it may be in order to get there. So government needs to do better. This is not a political issue. It's a everyone issue. Yeah. And unfortunately, it's only gotten worse as a result of the One Big Beautiful Bill.
And I want to ask it and connect that, because I want to know what the ultimate, you know, intention is, the ultimate end result that these companies want. Or I know with the, I heard that story that Judith spoke about, and part of the intention was to sort of, people would just give up. Is that the ultimate intention? Do they want people to give up? Do they spend less money? I mean, calculate, like, you know, I guess connect the dots for us about how this is actually profitable to companies, how this helps industries by making it so annoying and putting all these hurdles in front of us. Explain that, connect that dot to the dollars and cents.
Yeah, so like health insurance is a great example. Like, what do you want to do as a health insurance company? You want to bring in the premiums that people pay every month, but then you don't actually want to pay for care, because that's money coming out of your bottom line. And so, you know, what we've seen, and I think health insurance companies have gone too far, we're seeing some pushback already, is the emergence of all these practices that make it hard to get care when you need it. So one great example is something called pre-auth. So, you know, if you need a procedure, you know, maybe it's a surgery, maybe it's a test, that you know, you and your doctor need to jump through a bunch of hoops to get that procedure approved. There are reasons to do this. There are certain types of medical care which are probably abused. You know, people are getting massages under the guise of needing chiropractic care. But most of the time, this is just, like, when you're sick, you're already overwhelmed. And then the idea that you have to spend, you know, an afternoon on the phone, that you have to be this courier, you know, running between your doctor's office and your insurer, you know, faxing paperwork, like, who is a fax machine, to get things approved, is, like, it's overwhelming for people. It makes sense why it sits in the system, because every time an insurance company doesn't have to pay for care, like, that's less money out of their bottom line.
Yeah.
But it drives us crazy and it makes us sick. And so, you know, something we're proposing is, like, when you do this, you make it standardized. Like, there's a simple web form your doctor can fill out. It should be speedy. For most things, they should get back to you within 24 or 48 hours. And it should be really limited. Like, if this is treatment for cancer, like, you need the treatment. Like, nobody's going to voluntarily do this. And so it should only be done for the things where there is real risk of abuse.
And I think the question is, do you feel like this could be legislated? For putting aside whether the politicians will legislate it, you guys feel like you could create airtight laws that wouldn't create new loopholes? Because I think healthcare is a great place to start. It's a classic case of it's not a truly competitive marketplace. We all understand that. It doesn't function like a normal business. And so when you're talking about incentives, it's a place where there's probably not as much incentive to fix this problem from the company side. So it's a great place to start with this. I think the question is, can you craft legislation that doesn't start us down some sort of whack-a-mole path where you outlaw this, but then the company does that, they reclassify things, et cetera, et cetera. Chad, you're nodding. You think we can do it?
I'm with you. Yeah, totally. Yeah. So our report identifies four targets that we think are both extremely annoying and are opportunities for legislators and agencies to act to in a very airtight way to actually solve those problems. And the four are health insurance, which we've talked, Neil was just talking about, and which everyone hates dealing with. And, and there are some very targeted interventions that we think policymakers can pursue. Two, we haven't talked about this yet, but robocalls and spam texts.
Oh, yeah.
Which are just crazy, and I can't believe we're 2026 still dealing with this.
No, and politicians are part of the problem here, right? I don't know if your sort of text message inbox is the same as mine, yes. But it's like,
if you ever if you ever given a dollar to anybody, yes,
you're gonna get emails for the rest of your life.
So robocalls, health insurance, and then there were two. Were there
health
two
insurance,
more? Yeah.
Customer service. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't press zero to talk to a live person anymore. You can't. It should be as easy to cancel a subscription as it was to sign up. These types of things. So bad customer service. And then four, which we've talked about, junk fees. It should be all in pricing. If it's a mandatory fee, it should be included up front. What you see is what you get.
Mm. Yeah. Speaking of junk fees, I think we have a caller who wants to talk about
Elise.
Junk. Yeah, Elise. Elise is calling from the road somewhere. Mm-hmm. Elise, you're on Studio 2. What's your story?
Hello. Well, I just wanted to call about because it stood out to me, like, literally last week, I had purchased tickets to a concert that was last week, but I ordered them in March off StubHub. Mm. And I never got them until 4 o'clock on the day of the concert. And I was really, really stressed about it. And then I looked at the fees and there was a $50 service fee. And it's like, what are they doing? Clearly they've done nothing for 3 months.
Right.
Yeah.
So I was like, why is that there?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you. That's at least from the road. I mean, I've had the same type of thing happen with, ticket resellers as well. Lots of hidden fees. And so, I don't know, Neil and Chad, if you could give people some advice. I mean, I know we've talked about time today is the thing you really need to be able to fight. No. Because the only way without this legislation existing, is there anything that people can do to sort of protect themselves from the... you know, all the hassles and the annoyances, and to ensure that they get justice, so to speak, from these corporate entities.
Yeah, I mean, so you can be a proactive consumer, and you know, if you're buying something, you can, you know, read the Reddit boards elsewhere about what are people's experiences if they need to return it or they need to use their health insurance, or you know, the service, if you're buying a car or whatever it is. So like, being a good consumer is helpful. No amount of laws and regulations, I think, are going to completely solve the problem that we need to be sort of agents for what matters for us. But I think also the policy world needs to meet folks halfway. There's certain reasonable expectations that you have. And we should make sure that their safeguards is a floor on behavior so that matches those reasonable expectations.
Lots of comments. Go ahead, Chad.
No, I think policy is such an important piece of it, though. And so the Biden administration worked on this, and they did rulemaking, you know, effectively a law around some of these junk fees, but it was applied very narrowly. And they also did this click to cancel rulemaking, which would have, again, made it as easy to cancel as it was to sign up. And many in Congress opposed it, and it was eventually scrapped by the courts with a lot of industry opposition. But I think policy is a key piece of this. This is what I'm working on right now, leading this effort called Project 2029, focused on what are the policy ideas that whoever comes next after this administration should be focused on. And we argue that, yes, we need to address high costs of rent. We need to take on childcare. We need to tackle energy costs, all of these big drivers of affordability or unaffordability in daily life. But we also need to be about, and policymakers need to take seriously, the smaller problems that people are facing. You know, the hour waited on hold, the dozens of calls just to get a return, the junk fees that pop up. These are things that are so universal for people. And they're real pain points, and we think policymakers should be paying attention to
and
them.
And they stack up, right? Like, each one is small.
Yeah, death but by death by a thousand cuts.
You start stacking up the hours
you got it.
Doing all of these things. And it's,
We are winding down the hour, but Laura from PA and from South Philly definitely disagree with my Amazon comment earlier, so perhaps I have had different experiences with Amazon than some of you. And real quick, can we squeeze in Jane from Glenside? Has been holding for a while. Jane, in 20 seconds or less, what's your big complaint?
Coupons at the food store. They're awful. You already are a
coupons.
Member. You sign up and have a store card, which was supposed to give you all their discounts. But now you have to have a digital coupon as well to get those sales things. It takes so much extra time, and I don't know why they do it.
Yeah, right. So some of the discounts come in automatically, and some you have to jump through hoops. Yeah. Thanks, Jane and Glenside. Thanks to everyone who has written in. I'm sorry we couldn't get to everyone this hour.
Super annoying.
I know. I'm going to say that's sort of annoying. Peter from Ben Salem, especially. I know you were holding for a bit. He had a problem,
Peter,
with a cruise line that was being very recalcitrant. But thank you to our guests, Neil Mahoney, professor of economics and director of the Stanford Institute for Economic Policy Research. Neil, appreciate the time today on Studio 2.
Thank you, Ari. Thank you,
Chad. And Chad Mazel, executive director of Project 2029, a Democratic Party policy blueprint. Chad, appreciate you coming on the show.
Thanks.
And by the way, MJ says the annoyance economy is another real problem that Congress could be solving. So a lot of people think this is something that should be a priority. So we shall see. By the way, thank you to our producers for putting everything together. They're definitely not annoying. Debbie Builder, Hazel May Bryan, and Ben Abrams. Mike Schiffler is our visual producer. Al Banks engineered today's show. Our executive producer is Kevin McCory. From Studio 2 here at WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Cherry Gregg.
I feel so bad for Peter and Ben Salem because he was holding for a while.
But at least we, a human,
I tried.
Answer the phone.
We tried. I'm Avi Wolfman Eric. Peter, please call back another time. We'd love to talk to you. And we'll talk to all of you
tomorrow.
Hopefully
it wasn't too annoying.